This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Brian Fernandez. And it's the 14th of February, 2018. It's Valentine's Day. We've got something special planned for Valentine's Day, Brian.
Well, just a dinner, but nothing okay. Fancy.
Okay, so you have a dinner. Okay, and with your fancy lady, is it? Okay. You know, while we slept, of course, you know, many things happened, including pressure on three politicians from three different and reasonably democratic states. So we had the Dutch foreign minister, as the prime minister of Israel, as well as the president of South Africa, all under pressure at the moment.
Yeah, so the Dutch foreign minister basically is under pressure because he had to step down after admitting that he lied about being in a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Right, and also Israeli police say that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu should be charged over alleged bribery. Now, he's been dogged by many allegations, and this is just the latest, I think. Also, there was a recent case of his son acting very badly. If you remember, that went viral and everybody was talking about it, the son of, you know, the children of the elite. What about South Africa?
Yeah, so South Africa's governing party has asked Jacob Zuma to resign for the sake of the country. Now, this is an ongoing saga dating back from last year, again, dogged by corruption scandals, especially with the Gupta brothers. So now they've given him an ultimatum to resign.
Right, so this is the governing party, the African National Congress, because the party of Nelson Mandela, which holds power at the moment in South Africa, and they've made a formal request for him to resign, I think in favor of his deputy Cyril Ramaphosa. Now, the one politician, well, the very unlikely one, who's enjoying a burst of goodwill is the North Korean leader. Now, he's come out to say recently, following his charm offensive, his country's charm offensive over the Winter Olympics, says further, he's called for further livening up of the warm climate of reconciliation that's been created by the Winter Olympics. Have you been following this story?
Well, first of all, I was quite amazed that they actually sent a delegation. They seem to be previously, you know, all their participation relatively low-key. In this case, you know, they had a cheerleading squad.
That was really quite spectacular. If you watch the videos of the North Korean cheerleading squad, there's something about synchronicity and North Korea. I don't know what is it that they can do so well.
Yeah, and
maybe that endless hours of torturous training.
Unfortunately, probably the case. But the thing is, they really stole the limelight. And obviously, Kim's sister being there also has obviously created a very warm climate, let's just say, amid all the cold among them.
Yeah, so the real anomaly, of course, in this was, you know, a Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, who was a surly figure who refused to stand for any country except his own. And it seems like, so here's a North Korean, this is a North Korean leadership that has suddenly sprung this great idea of changing the terms of the public perception, you know, of itself and, you know, of its leadership. Whereas the West here, the Democratic West, having a huge trouble. I mean, this in the case of the U.S.
Mike Pence, yeah.
Having great trouble in changing its script. Yeah. They seem to be locked in that po-faced strategy that they have elected for a year now. Well, we'll be back with a look at happy birthday greetings inappropriately given during Chinese New Year. What do we do about that? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Rod Stewart with This Old Heart of Mine. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Brian Fernandez. And it's the 14th of February. It's Valentine's Day, and you have greetings that you want to give to us in particular. You can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. I'm starved for Valentine's greetings. I've come, not a single person has wished me Valentine's.
You're not shy, are you, Sharad?
No, I feel I'm the kind of guy that just says what he needs. I mean, you know, so what can I say? You can also tweet us at BFM Radio, or tweet me at Sharad Kutan. with your Valentine greeting. Now, we were talking about the charm offensive of the North Korean administration and how that contrasts today sharply with the way in which the American administration under Donald Trump deals with matters. In fact, Brian, do you remember a novel? I mean, it's from 1958, which is a little bit before our time, as it were, but it's called The Ugly American. Do you remember it?
Well, The Ugly American is a term that has just stuck in a lot of people's minds.
Yes, and it's coined from a book that was written in 1958 and then subsequently made into a movie. And it's all about the bungling diplomatic efforts of the U.S., you know, in the developing world, or the post-World War II world during the Cold War. And, you know, and it makes you think, about the way in which ambitions have to be matched with capacities, at least in terms of how to deal with the other and in different cultures.
So, you know, it's quite interesting. In the Obama administration, you really had that positive image, a much more positive image of America. But that whole ugly American image has just come back.
Has resurfaced with a vengeance,
again.
Hasn't
it? Absolutely.
Now, okay, so we have potentially things that happen here that sound like they're akin to the ugly American syndrome. Now, there was news of Bukit Gantang UMNO chief, Syed Abdul Hussein Hafiz, Syed Abdul Fazal, he has had to apologize over a Chinese New Year banner, which, you know, had his name on it, which greeted Malaysians who celebrate Chinese New Year with "Happy Birthday" instead of the appropriate "Prosperous New Year." Now, he very quickly came out to apologize for the mistake. He said that he felt that he would make an immediate correction. That's what he said, immediate correction. But because some people are making hay from this and saying that this is about cultural insensitivity rather than just a banner and wording gone wrong.
But you see, Sharad, let's flip it and say it. If it's a DAP political figure that actually made a mistake for Hari Raya, the flack that he would have got out of it would be far worse than this, actually.
Yeah, perhaps. But, you know, against it's the same thing, right? Which is that, in a very divisive political climate, people are going to be taking up all kinds, all manner of issues and trying to make political hay from it. But if we step back from that divisive climate and ask ourselves, I mean, really, was this such a bad thing? I mean, was this such a serious issue?
For me, it was just a very honest mistake. Somebody made a translation error. I think they should have probably been more vigilant in terms of checking, especially when something as important like this goes out. I think it points to failure in his staffing more than anything else. Honest mistake, nothing more than that, I think.
Yeah, so, okay. But it does also point to the question of minorities and majorities. Right? The assumption always is that people who are part of the majority community are less sensitive to others just because they're often surrounded by others from their own community and cultural and social references that they don't have to think very actively about, and that as a consequence, minorities are often there are often mistakes made at the expense of minorities. At the same time, on the other side, you have minorities who feel like minorities and therefore, as a result, take offense at everything because they feel that they're
always the aggrieved party.
Yeah. And, and that seems to be part of the dynamic that you have in Malaysia. I hope, since we're coming up to Chinese New Year, there's a bit more generosity going around, not just in those ang pao packs. Some of us, and some people have been complaining.
But generosity of forgiveness.
Yeah, forgiveness. People have been passing around white ang pao packs and saying, well, how culturally inappropriate is that? White is often used a color associated with death. So again, not a great thing. Is that such a big issue? I don't know. Tell us. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Next week, we take up the prickly question of racism and renting in Kuala Lumpur. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was ZZ Top and Give Me All Your Loving. Part of our Valentine's Day playlist. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez. It is the 14th of February, Valentine's Day, the only Valentine's Day that matters this year. It's the only Valentine's Day.
It does come only once.
Yeah, we did in fact get Brian, you and me. We got a message from Olivia,
one of our colleagues.
Yeah, that's the downside of it. I was not going to mention that, but she did say, "Morning, guys, happy Valentine's Day." Thank you, Ollie. You know, happy Valentine's Day to you too. We were really hoping for more anonymous messages, but never mind. We'll take what we can get. Now, not everybody in the Klang Valley gets as much love as the next person, do they?
This is a very unfortunate case where a tweet has recently gone viral showing an exchange between a property agent and a potential tenant. The tenant, however, was rejected because of his race. The owner of the room wanted a Chinese local, but the potential tenant was Indian. Now,
the exchange actually doesn't happen between the landlord and the tenant. I think it happens between two individuals who are intermediaries. So presumably the agent on one side, on behalf of the landlord, and the friend who happens to be Chindian, meaning she's of mixed parentage.
Ethnicity, yeah.
Yeah, she's, you know, part Indian, part Chinese. And so you have what sounds like a fairly hilarious exchange at the start, because it's like, well, you know, we don't take Indians. And they're like, oh, I'm Chindian. Well, okay, well, in that case, we might consider you a kind of exchange. But then it gets much more tense as the young woman, Mavinia, I think is her name, she actually starts to say, well, this is racist and this is discriminatory. And the guy says, well, you know, I'm only doing my job. It's the landlord's right. After all, it's his or her house, you know. And then there's also this whole back and forth with, you know, I think at some point somebody says, go back to China if you think that's how you should conduct things here. And I wonder, you know, if this is yet another storm in a teacup in a city where people do have their preferences. Do these preferences necessarily amount to discrimination?
Well, you see, the thing is, so I've been a victim of this, not only in Malaysia, but even in Australia.
Yes, Australia too.
No, because Australia has anti-discrimination legislation. In Australia, I experienced this actually from a Chinese lady who refused to rent to me. And then
she must have known about your reputation back home.
And then what happened was somebody pointed out to her that she's breaking the law. I didn't want to take, you know, go and live there, obviously.
She was Australian.
She was a Chinese Australian.
Okay.
And so, you know, over the years I've experienced this and it irks me. It absolutely irks me that in this day and age you can do that. And perhaps I think one of the ways that we can tackle the problem, just like in Australia, is actually to get legislation.
Do we want to legislate every relationship that we have between people? And what was it? In fact, at some point in the responses that Mavinia got to her tweet, now, people say, well, would you even want to go and live there? Now that you know the landlord to be racist, why would you even want to go and live with them?
So here's the thing. If you're renting an apartment and the landlord isn't there, I think, yeah, I would still go and rent it if I can do that. But, you know, interesting, an agent told me the other day that for African nationals, for example, in my condominium, they have to pay twice the deposit.
Yeah, here it is. Malaysia aspires to, at least the government does, to have more foreign students. But, you know, foreign students, depending on where they come from, face all kinds of discrimination. I think kids from the African continent in particular. What's interesting for me, Brian, is the kind of excuses that people make. And it's really telling about their mindset. And I've been in a situation where I was trying to get a friend who's Malay, to rent the apartment next to mine. So I spoke to the agent and they said, no, we don't rent to Malay people. And I got into an exchange about this. They said, well, you know, the landlord had a bad experience. I mean, okay, fine, they had a bad experience. But you have a bad experience with one individual, two individuals. Can you then stereotype everybody in that community? Because we're talking about millions of people here. And use that, your personal experience, as the basis for discrimination. Can you? Should you?
Well, the thing is, it actually happens. And a lot of times, unfortunately, I think under current legislation, it's actually the right of the property owner to decide. So, you know, because of that, they make a choice not to rent to an Indian or a Malay or whatever.
Yeah, and I have I think we all do have these anecdotes. I once called an agent on behalf of a friend who is American, is American national, living and working in Malaysia. And when I asked the person, whether they would rent it to my friend or how much the rent was, they said, "Is he African American? I think or white? I mean, is the person black or white?" And that seemed perfectly, the person was perfectly shameless, absolutely shameless in asking that kind of question. You know, for me, I would cringe, even
but
if I thought
no
it
context.
Myself, I would. So what is it they don't have?
They don't have any context in terms of the fact that it's actually wrong to do something like that. They have no awareness of that.
Yeah, so the question, is it a norm? So in Malaysia, is it in fact culturally acceptable to say that you only want to house somebody who is exactly like you or presumed to be exactly like you? And that this is good sense, in fact, that in Malaysia it's seen as a reasonable response to a world where there are all kinds of different people and you want to reduce conflict. So you go for people who are presumably just like you.
Okay, so if it's just like you, so let me... To defend, okay, let's take a different argument and to try to defend maybe this position. If, for example, you're renting out a room and you're a predominantly Malay family, I think if you did not want to take in a Chinese tenant, I would understand because, for example, for food for reasons, because maybe they want to consume stuff that's not halal, you're not very comfortable about it. Okay, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. But if you're renting a whole apartment or something like that, there's no excuse for that.
Well, and so this comes back to where we are as a society and whether, legislation is going to solve the problem. It might stop egregious acts of racism, but will it change the culture on the ground? Because if you don't change the culture on the ground, I imagine people are going to find all kinds of ways to get what they want, or in this case, avoid what they don't. Now, remember, we also have BFM's B-side Spotify Valentine's playlist. You can always plug into that. We'll retweet a link to that, and you can fill your day with songs of love and romance. Now, taking us all the way up to the first bulletin of the morning, we have Cake and Mad Love You Madly. How appropriate. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Jimi Hendrix, As Bold as Love. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez. It is the 14th of February 2018, which makes it Valentine's Day. And for those of you who cringe at the thought of Valentine's Day and think of all the cheesy songs that are out there that they're going to have to be listening to when they're in malls and wherever, there is a saving grace for you, and that's a compilation of the most underrated love songs that we at BFM have put together for your listening pleasure. And you can access this by going to www.bside.my. That's B-S-I-D-E, B-side. And so there you have it. Why do you... 10 songs that will make your Valentine's Day. That's what we're calling it. Okay. Now... we also had some tweets come in. Chan, referring to the discussion that we had earlier, Brian, says there should be a law to prevent any form of discrimination, not just ethnic. And that's interesting because one of the things that I encountered, Brian, over this weekend was a little project called Dialogue in the Dark, which attempts to get you to empathize with those who are visually impaired, who have to deal with all kinds of challenges when negotiating the city.
Yeah, so apparently the concept is whereby, visitors are led by blind guides in groups to very specifically constructed dark rooms in which scent, sound, wind, temperature, and texture convey the characteristics of their daily environments. So this is a reversal of roles, essentially. So people who can see are taking out of their familiar context, right? Their familiar environment.
Yeah. And that's what happened to all of us. We were given a white cane and a group of four of us were led into a room. And then we had to follow the voice of the leader. We also, you know, some of us clutching each other's shirts or, you know, or holding each other on the shoulder. And because some of us walking very, very slowly because we were terrified of tripping or bumping into something. The whole thing is because it's constructed with your safety in mind. But it was quite an experience, especially because they managed to create an environment that was so dark. I kept my eyes open, but I could not see a thing, Brian. It was pitch black. And some other friends decided to close their eyes. They thought this would be a better way of dealing with the experience.
Was that the first time you've ever experienced something like that, Chirag?
Yeah, absolutely. It was my first time. The guide was very astute. And, you know, one of the questions that came up at the end of the dialogue when we were sitting at a, as it were, a little mama store within the space in complete darkness was somebody said, how are you getting around so easily? Saying to the person who had led us around, say, are you using night vision goggles? Because the presumption there was that the person, you know, having negotiated the thing successfully, must have been a sighted person who had some extra equipment. When in fact, that sighted person was not in fact sighted, he was in blind, and he'd asked us, guess, why do you think I've been able to do this so successfully? You know.
Yeah, but one of the things is, of course, that, and this is a proven phenomena, that when you lose the capacity to, you know, either you lose your arm or your eyes or your ears or something, other senses sort of level upwards, and then what happens is you have the heightened sense of different senses. So I think that one of the things that happens is they have an extraordinary ability to in terms of feelings, a sense of smell, a sense of touch, you know, if they've lost their sense of sight. I actually experienced what you did a couple of years ago in a cave. And I think we dropped our only torch. I think we ran our battery in one torchlight. The other one we dropped. We actually had to stay put because it was so pitch dark until the guides came and helped us. And that was very unsettling.
Okay, so the question, I guess, is that a short experience like that, this whole event took about maybe 15 minutes. Is that enough to create empathy? And I think that perhaps that's one of the objectives, creating empathy with the participants so that they sense what it is that, you know, people who are visually impaired have to deal with. Or is it one of those things where you're sighted, you go in, you know, pat yourself on the back for having, you know, succeeded in this challenge, and you go away pretty much the same person that you walked into the experiment with as?
I think in my case with the cave incident, that really gave me a heightened sense of empathy for people because, you know, really you could imagine, you know, your life just in total darkness.
Right. So spelunking here again as spelunking is cave exploration, mm-hmm. isn't it? So spelunking there being an entry point into the lives of the visually impaired, is it? Okay, we'll be back with a look at roses. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this was Blue Suede and Hooked on a Feeling. I'm sure I'd couldn't with me, Brian Fernandez. It is just 49 minutes past 6 in the morning. It's the 14th of February. It is Valentine's Day. Remember, you can always go to our website, the B-side, www.bside.my, for an alternative playlist of Valentine's songs.
You know, Sharad, when you think of Valentine's Day, you often think of flowers. And this normally burns a deep pocket in people's, especially guys, right? They're buying flowers for their girlfriends and so forth. So prices tend to spike tremendously during Valentine's Day, you know, because the florists and the wholesalers jack up prices to make a lot of money. But apparently, according to many florists, prices this year have dropped quite, and there's greater availability compared to previous years. So according to the owner of Nu Fu Chun Florist, a single stem this year only cost between 4 to 5 ringgit compared to last year where prices were 7 to 10 ringgit. And in terms of orders, he's actually only received 10 pre-orders for Valentine's Day compared to 40 last year.
So, I mean, you know, as somebody who's massively heterosexual, Brian, do you do that thing? I mean, do you see that as your responsibility as a male to, as a man, to go out and buy flowers for your woman?
Okay, what I'm going to say is quite controversial. I used to do that as a young person. I think today, now, you should express your love in different ways. Instead of just spending on flowers that cost 5 times more or 10 times more or whatever, there are different things that you can do to show your affection and love and so that you really care.
Cheaper things you can do, is it? Is that what you become
more
in your old age?
More value for money.
You become the value for money boyfriend, is it? Potential boyfriend. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Okay, we spoke to Joanne Holm. She owns the online florist Happy Bunch, and we asked her if Happy Bunch is seeing a drop in demand for roses this Valentine's Day.
Not for Happy Bunch. In fact, because we are only offering one type of bunch, and they're all roses. So we haven't seen any drop in demand. I mean, we've met our target from last year, and yeah, we're actually seeing an increase this year. I think maybe for some conventional florists, there's a lot of competition, obviously, because there's a lot of new florists that have come into play the last 2 years or 3 years, including Happy Bunch, obviously. And our flowers are being offered at a very affordable price point. So that could be a possible reason that some of the demand has shifted, but it doesn't mean there's a complete drop in demand for the industry.
So if a Happy Bunch is not seeing a drop in demand, we asked Joan what a Happy Bunch is doing right.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find something below 100 ringgit this week. I mean, the wholesalers are also selling at a higher price. The gardeners are obviously also trying to mark up as well. So you'll be really hard-pressed to find something below 100 ringgit this week, actually. So when everyone is obviously having a huge price hike, we are trying to keep it as affordable as possible so that a lot more people can order. And we are actually seeing that. We're seeing a lot of different kind of people ordering. So they're not just, you know, couples or boyfriend and girlfriends or husband and wife. There's a lot of younger people actually ordering through us and stepping up to order at this price point. They're sending it to best friends, they're sending it to their moms.
Now, finally, we asked if she thinks the drop in sales is being felt more by conventional florists rather than those online, and if there is a general lack of interest, especially among the young, when it comes to flowers on a Valentine's Day.
Really, from our end, we don't see any lack of interest. I mean, the inquiries were coming in way before Valentine's itself, right? So the last couple of weeks. But Malaysians being Malaysians, obviously a lot of them are very last-minute orders. They put a lot of last-minute orders through. I don't think that the young people are not ordering flowers. I think definitely, for sure, they're doing a lot of online orders because it's just a trend that everyone is moving online, right? So 80% of our visitors are actually through the phone and not even on the website, but through, not even through the computer, but on the phone. So whatever is fast, whatever is convenient is going to help. So definitely the online ordering has definitely a surge compared to a walk-in florist, for instance.
That was Joanne Ho, the owner of the online florist Happy Bunch. Brian, you know, around the world, there are people who push back on Valentine's Day in a very violent way. In India, there, you know, quite a number of groups usually kind of organizing themselves around the idea of nationalism or, you know, cultural rights. And, you know, often from the Hindu community who see Valentine's Day as the imposition of Western culture and such and, you know, attack couples and such. Why do you think Valentine's, you know, provoke such strong emotions in people?
Well, I think the Indian example is an extreme example because globally, I think it's just been embraced as a very special day, but it's been commercialized tremendously. So essentially, businesses have seen this as a great opportunity to make money and they've promoted it to the hilt. So I, you know, the Indian example really, I think, is
but
a one-off.
But it's only that. Well, you also see it in Indonesia and other places where the idea is that notions of romantic love, especially in, you know, promoting the free mingling of the sexes, meaning boys and girls will meet without their parents' knowledge, and this is not a first step towards marriage. All that flies in the face of, you know, tradition and, you know, the demands that, you know, that people focus on the more important things like procreation and marriage alliances and property sharing and, you know,
but
consolidation.
But Sharad, it's also in those countries that you mentioned, so India, Indonesia, it's a generational thing. Among younger people, they've embraced it. The older people find probably it uncomfortable. So they've, I think those protests come really from an older generation rather than younger people.
You know, I'm wondering, why we haven't had a protest this year about Valentine's. It seems to have passed without much mention.
Well, it's still early days today.
It is, isn't it? Okay, taking us up to the next bulletin is Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, Better Things. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Brian Fernandez, and it's just coming up 7 minutes past seven in the morning. It is the 14th of February, 2018. Now, because over the weekend, we had some tragic news of the death of an Indonesian domestic worker after she was abused by her employers, allegedly. Those employers have been taken into custody. Now, this case, Brian, has triggered outrage among NGOs and netizens, and in particular, the civil society group Tenaga Nita. Its executive director, Glorine Das, says that a lack of legal protections has led to the prevalence of domestic worker abuse. Though others are saying that perhaps, you know, this is just one of those outlier cases. It's, you know, it's spectacular in just the sheer brutality of the attacks on this young woman, but it doesn't define the majority of cases and relationships when it comes to when we come to talk about domestic work.
But I think, Sharad, I think my opinion is, in fact, we need to have some legislation really to have a framework and define how we should treat these foreign workers, particularly when they live in your home. This is where abuse comes in because, you know, a lot of them don't get the adequate, any leave, for example. You know, they're literally indentured workers. And then also they should regulate how much time they actually work every day, how much food you need to give them, because essentially this problem of ensuring that they have adequate place to stay, proper nutrition, enough rest. I think that varies across the board. There's some people who treat their maids very, very well. There's some people who don't.
Right. And so what Glorine from Tenaga Nita is saying is that the classification of domestic workers as domestic servants or maids in the Employment Act only encourages a so-called master-servant relationship. That's in quotes. And this mindset is a part of the problem. Now, to get more insights into the call for a new law, we spoke to Gloria and asked her, why do abuse cases continue to happen despite constant efforts to introduce regulations to protect migrant rights?
Tenaga Nita has maintained the main reason that this abuses of domestic workers is so widespread is basically due to the lack of legal protection, and particularly the Employment Act 1995, which supposedly protects the rights of domestic workers, does not even recognize them as workers, but instead defines them as servants. So as a result, many employers feel that they can subject their domestic workers to sustained abuse and torture with impunity, which sometimes, and tragically, as in the case of Adelina, who passed away on Sunday, and many others before her. On another note, you know, for those who seek to free themselves from abusive and exploitative work by running away, because we continue to hear domestic workers run away too, you know, but they are criminalized as well as prosecuted under Immigration Act because they automatically become undocumented. And from our experience of such cases, it becomes very clear that the authorities and enforcement agencies, including the judiciary, continues to punish the victim because the responsibility to prove that one is legal in this country is on the victim when the controls are with the employer or the agent. And for many years, Tanaganita has stated over and over again, as I mentioned earlier, that it is only when the rights of workers are protected through laws, when domestic workers are recognized as workers and not as servants and mates and helpers, will employers, agents, and other stakeholders, in fact, Malaysian as an whole, can ensure respect and dignity for domestic workers.
We asked Glorine about the enforcement of the regulations that exist and if those regulations are, in fact, adequate.
You see, in terms of challenges when it comes to enforcement, because we know there's a regulation to protect domestic workers that's within the Employment Act, there's a lot of challenges in enforcing this regulation. Many of them, the domestic workers themselves, are not even aware that they have contract, what is stipulated in the contract. No, but again, the regulation does not sufficiently respond to the human needs of a domestic worker, nor protect their rights as a worker and as a human being. In fact, you know, we have studied the regulation in depth, and it does not establish satisfactory safeguards to prevent and respond to labor rights violations faced by workers in general, in particularly domestic workers, and as workers in the private home. You know, further, if ill treatment and abuses happen, the regulation also does not provide adequate avenues for domestic workers to seek protection and access and get access to justice. And in terms of monitoring system, now my question is, what are the monitoring system and how can monitoring happen when the place of work, the employer's home or the employment place is seen as a private domain, which is not subject to public or to any enforcement to ensure that the labor rights and human rights of domestic workers are protected.
Now, you know, coming back, Brian, to the earlier question that we asked, if this was just in one of those rare cases and that most employers and employees have a good relationship. And we asked Glorine if that was, in fact, true.
Firstly, these cases are not isolated in nature. I'm going to give you statistics based on the cases that's been filed in Tanaganita from June 2017 to December. We're just talking about 6 months. There are a total of 120 people who have filed their complaints with Tanaganita. 82 of them are women. Now, the top violations that has come through is no rest day, no contract signed, contract substitution, unlawful deduction, food deprivation, non-renewal of work permit. And I'm talking about 120 people, 82 women. And out of that, 85 women were rescued and given care and counseling in our shelter. Now, these numbers may be small compared to 250,000 registered domestic workers in Malaysia, but one case is already far too many.
That was Glorine Das, Executive Director of Tanaganita, on the question of migrant rights following that tragic case of the death of an Indonesian domestic worker.
Yeah, so Sharad, 120 cases in 6 months is really quite a lot, and that's just submitted to one NGO. So the problem is a far bigger one, and think about it, these are just reported problems. So how many more go unreported?
Yeah, because there's a percentage, right? It is not that many, right? The percent 120 out of 250,000 is not a very high percentage. I could do the math. But the important thing, of course, I mean, and you might take the view that Glorine takes, that one case is one case too many. The issue is whether we have systematic or structural issues. And I think that's what Glorine seems to speak to, right? There's a lack of adequate laws on one hand, we have a lack of enforcement on the other. And perhaps in the case of many foreign domestic workers, their particular countries don't do enough to ensure their protection, meaning, you know, the countries that they've come from. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.